Shut the freaking hell up!
This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
What Brock Huard says?
No, he's not a friend of mine.
Subscribe to receive every episode at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
Ah, we stink, man.
Now, here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
No way!
Well, sports doesn't just come back, man. It comes back with a bang. They're like, oh, you want sports? You miss sports here in Seattle? How about one weekend where we just throw everything at you at the same time? We're going to give you a team name. We're going to give you a baseball season. Seahawks are going to make certainly the biggest trade in terms of what they've given up in our time here together, Brock. Maybe in the history of the Seahawks.
It was a big one-up game this weekend.
Everybody had to one-up.
It was a one-up from the fire hose. And we're just like, oh!
Yeah, didn't we get a hockey name, too, like the day before this baseball season began?
We did.
We snuck that in
Thank
as well.
Thank God, too, because I've been so worried about the name. Like, I'm so glad we finally got
just
that
in the nick of time.
I know. I've been desperately waiting and, you know,
you have
pining for a name for years now. Before there was even talk of a team here in Seattle, I always wondered, hey, if they brought a team here, what should they call it?
That was you.
Can I just tell you a quick little story? I was on the road filling up with some gas, as was my father-in-law, and he looked at me, and I had no idea of time, place, context, anything. He looked at me at the pump over. He goes, Kraken? And just the look on his face, like, Kraken?
And you didn't know what it was. What he was talking about.
I had no idea. I mean, I knew the name was coming. I had not associated for at that moment.
And I'm going to guess.
And I think Gigi had let him know. Of course.
Gigi and Papa don't seem like the Kraken audience. Like they don't seem like the demo for the Kraken name.
So. No.
Right? Like, that's not.
Even though he's a former Commodore of the Seattle Yacht Club and has spent 50 years on the water.
Right, but is he a Greek myth aficionado?
No.
The
Iliad, the Odyssey.
Right.
Where's Papa Adam?
Like, has he?
Is he Medusa?
Has he seen? What is it?
Clash of the Titans?
Maybe
has
not.
Has he ever released the Kraken?
Clearly,
I don't think so.
Not. Maybe the rum is directed.
No.
I don't think he's the audience.
No,
he's
not the
either,
target
no.
audience. No. No, but just the look on the inquisitive look on his face as he was pumping the gas.
Right,
Kraken.
Right, Kraken. What is the crate?
Yeah, I don't know. I love Papa. You know that. Gigi and I are tight.
Real close.
But I don't know whether they're the target demo.
No,
for that name. This is
probably
a name for the next generation.
That's for Titus.
I mean, it was, yes. What does Titus think?
Not a real opinion. Yeah, he's got a lot of other stuff going on. He's more concerned with the Mariners and the Seahawks, his Patrick Mahomes fat head. He's got lots of other things going on. His six-pack, he asked me the other day, Dad, I think I'm developing a six-pack.
Is he?
No, but that's okay. I mean, I didn't shoot down the dream. I said, absolutely.
Yeah, you and Howdy, you're both developing six-packs.
I've been working on it my whole life.
Yes, that's going well. So as you said, your big game went up, and we'll get to some Mariners observations here. And by the way, I do like the Kraken name. I think it's good. I'm not going to say any more than that about it.
I mean, it's okay.
I like it. I like the name, and I really like the uniforms.
The uniforms are great.
The colors
are
great.
The logos are phenomenal.
The only thing I don't love is the S logo. I love the other logo with the anchor and the and the Space Needle.
That one's
That's
very
amazing.
Popular.
Yeah, but they're not making gear with it. Like, I looked to buy some gear, but all the gear only has the S.
Mm.
I'm going to hold out until I can get that anchor.
Man, I like that
I
S.
I want a hat with an anchor. Mm. You like the S?
I do. I really like
it's
it.
A little serpentine.
Oh, that's I love serpents.
Serpents.
Yeah, sea serpents.
But I don't want to wear serpents. Yeah, no thanks. I'm good. Give me the anchor. I'm nautical, yes. Serpentine, no. That's kind of my rule with clothing. Trying to stay away from anything snake or eel related, and it's just a little too close for my
Seattle comfort. Water moccasins. Whoa. No, thank you.
Right, so we're doing better than that, right?
Absolutely.
The Seattle Sea Snakes.
By a mile, yes.
The Sea Snakes. You know who could play for the Seattle Sea Snakes? Seth Smith.
Seth Smith.
We put Seth Smith on the Seattle Sea Snakes. Okay. So all this leads up to Saturday when the Seahawks make this gigantic trade. Jamal Adams is going to be a Seahawk, Brock. I'll be very clear right off the bat. I like it. I can't quite say I love it because I think they're giving up a lot, right? You just can't, where are you going to replace Bradley McDougal? Like, it's okay, fine. You're going to give up those two first-round picks, but I'm just not going to, forget about Bradley McDougal. Because, guys like that don't grow on trees. I don't see Bradley McDougals all over the NFL. I mean, look, it's fine. First round pick, another first round pick. You got what, the third round pick that you got to give. You get the fourth back to kind of make up for it, and you're going to get Jamal Adams. I mean, I like that, but don't ask me to. I mean, this guy's got two French bulldogs. He said they were like miniature pit bulls, which couldn't be less accurate. But he does have two French bulldogs, and I respect that about Bradley McDougal.
You're not just going to forget
about. I'm not just going to forget about Bradley McDougal. Okay.
Are you done yet?
Oh, yes? An ode to Mark. Okay.
I love the player. I hate the deal. I love the player. Jamal Adams, the player. If you go back and listen to one of my profiles from 3-4 years ago before the draft, there's a couple guys coming out of college that I've seen. Jalen Ramsey, the old DB out of Florida State, was another over the last 5-6 years of college football where I'm like, man, that's a Seahawk. Oh, gosh, if Pete and crew had Jalen Ramsey coming out of Florida State with those arms that go on forever and his physical nature. And Jamal Adams was a guy that I remember. It's like, yep, this is a mix of Cam and Earl. This guy loves ball. This guy's all over the ball. He is instinctive, and he's just a football player. He's everything, just the essence of everything that Pete and John look for and love in a football player. It is Jamal Adams. So I absolutely love the player, but I don't like the deal at all.
The deal's pretty similar. To what the Rams gave up for
Jalen Ramsey,
right?
And we skewered those guys.
Did
yes.
we?
Yes.
Oh, I don't think I did.
Big time.
I think I liked it.
Nope, we skewered them.
I'm pretty sure I liked it.
We crushed. In fact, I went back
to the Barbie.
I'm pretty sure I liked it.
We skewered them because they gave up 2 first-round picks for a cornerback when they didn't have a quarterback. Yep. That was the foolish part of that decision.
Right, is saying, you know, you've spent all this capital. They'd already spent all of the earlier capital on their quarterback who's not very good.
Yeah. And they're, oh, this is going to put us over the top and bring Jared Goff a ring.
I don't think so.
Jared
Goff's still not very good.
No.
Difference here is you've already got Russell Wilson.
You've got an offense.
What you need is someone on your defense that isn't. Brock, they got their pass rusher, and I don't understand why you won't give them credit for it.
Six and a half sacks.
He had 4 more sacks than anyone on their team last year.
No, Rasheem Green had 4. He had six and a half.
He had 2.5 more sacks than anyone. He would have been their leading sacker last year by 2.5 sacks.
Yes, he would have been.
I think that would have given him half of the sacks the team had on the year.
2 first-round picks and a 3rd-round pick, and eventually you're going to have to pay him. And it looks like you're not going to have to pay him for this upcoming season, which gives you more flexibility if you're truly going to be quote-unquote all in and make another move or two on your D-line, which I think you still have to do. But the 2 first-round picks for an organization that has loved volume, that has loved manipulating the draft, that is John Schneider's greatest strength. You talk to anybody in the league and anybody around that building, they all say the same thing. You want to watch John Schneider work? Watch him on draft day. That is where he's been at his best for 8 or 9 years, manipulating the board, making deals happen, getting trades done, adding picks, adding volume so they can get more bites at the apple. Everything that we've talked about, and you're going to lose those 2 first-round picks for back-to-back years.
Yeah, well, okay, so there's a few things to unpack there. I'm going to ultimately disagree with you. I think this is worth it, and I'll come back to some of the arguments you just made. I trust you that you love the player, and he plays a position that I love, which is safety, and I think that Cam Chancellor, of all the losses that they've taken personnel-wise over the last few years from this defense at its height to where it is now, I think the single individual loss that hurt the most was Cam. Individual. Now, I think the biggest loss overall was what happened to their pass rush.
Yes.
Going from all of the guys they had rotating into where they are now, which is nowhere.
Yep.
So overall, pass rush, but it's
I
not one
fair.
Play.
Yeah, I think that makes sense.
The single player that they miss most is Cam Chancellor.
I think Sherman would be close because people literally didn't throw at him, and he could take the ball away and took it away at a rate that you haven't really seen.
100.
The overall, everything you got from Cam, with the hitting and the big playability and the athleticism, not to mention the leadership and sort of just that. I mean, he was the alpha on a team of alphas, right? I mean, they all look to Cam. He's the guy. And that is everything that Jamal Adams is supposed to be. I'm not suggesting he's the same player. I know they have some differences. But obviously, big-time hitter and enforcer on the back end. And more than anything, leader, alpha, male. Like Cam, a guy that you just don't mess with, he instantly kind of gets that respect in the locker room. The guy's
yes.
Twitter handle is @Prez, Brock. You don't mess with @Prez, okay? He's that guy. So I love that element of it, and I think they needed to give up what they needed to give up to get him. And I'm not one of these like, John Schneider would have blown the picks anyway. No, that's a lot. That's what keeps me from saying I love it. But you're in a win-now window. You've got Russell Wilson in his prime, that needing superstars and needing a defense to complement. They're not going to let Russ cook, people. It's not going to happen. Could they throw a little more than they did? Sure. Could they open it up a little bit more? Yeah, absolutely. But if you think this is going to become the greatest show on turf, you're wrong. Pete will not let that happen, and it's not because he's run first. It's because Pete Carroll sincerely believes in a balanced approach to football. Balance between offensive and defensive, and even more so, balance between the run and the pass. So if you're going to do that, you better have someone on your defense that's good. And right now, you got Bobby Wagner and Bubkus. So when you bring him in and you pair him with Quandre Diggs, and all of a sudden you start to turn the secondary into something that maybe the Niners and the Rams and everybody else are going to have to think twice before they just start throwing those seam routes down the middle to their tight ends. Because guess what? You may have Jamal Adams pull a Cam Chancellor and pummel somebody, and all of a sudden those seam routes don't look the same as they once did. And you're going to need that extra guy who can come up in the box, because guess what? Those teams like to run the ball too. So I love it. I think he's very much what they need. I wanted them to do this. They gave up more than I thought they were going to. I'm not just going to forget about Bradley McDougal. But at the end of the day, I really, really like this deal for the Seahawks. And in the window they're in right now with Russell at this particular spot in his career, I think they needed it.
So for a guy that has spent years, as we have, a decade or so, being on just the team dynamic side, right? The team build and the GM hat. And as much as we have enjoyed through all the years, and with the baseball team, man, there've been a lot of conversation. The football team, these two, John and Pete, have been just bedrock for 9 years and largely done it in a very similar way. Never just, you know, selling out for the moment and always, you know, trying to stay young and always trying to acquire through the draft and the acquisition and be a developmental program with young people that you develop your stars, because that's the best way to sustain. So you just kind of throw all of that conversation we've had for 8, 9, 10 years out the door and say, no. Yep, it was worth it for this player.
I didn't say that. No, I said it's worth it in this window. Big difference. I mean, with all the conversations we've had about the Mariners, finding them in a position where they had, you know, some of the best players in the league and we just needed somebody to push them over the top, that hasn't happened. We've been looking for them to get as many bites at the apple recently, especially with as many young players as possible. But Brock, at a couple of trade deadlines when I thought they were close, I said, go.
Mm-hmm.
You have to. These chances only come around so often. And unfortunately, one of those years, Austin Jackson was the best they could get.
Ooh, that was a tough year.
That wasn't good, right? I mean, I think that it's not just an overall team building, always be conservative. No, it's not that. It's look for the future when you're not good, and when you're ready and you need a piece, be aggressive in going to get it. And that's what I think they are here.
Would you have rather had Yannick Ngakoue?
For the same price. It's funny. I asked the
exact same question.
Kyle and I were together when this happened. We were golfing together when the trade came down. A few minutes later, I said, would you do the same deal for Yannick Ngakoue? And my guess is they had that option. And obviously, they decided that this is what they wanted. Now, I don't think you can do it.
I don't think you can do it for Yannick Ngakoue. I don't think you can do it.
Because the player's not as good, even
correct.
If the position's more important?
Correct. Exactly.
He seems more mercurial to me. Like I don't know. I mean, look, maybe I'm wrong here, but I don't trust that his success will continue as much as I trust that this kid's.
And he would also need an immediate deal or much sooner
right
than
away.
Jamal.
So I'm a franchise.
Right. You still have a year or two
before you got to make. Right.
Hey, so, just curious here. Clarify for me. When you say window, is that Pete's window? Is that John's window? Is that Russell's window? Bobby's window?
It's Russell's.
It's yes. But first of all, yes. The answer to that question is yes.
All of the above.
But I was referring specifically to Russ.
And Russ needing superstars, and Russ needing somebody on that other side of the ball to pair with Bobby and just be legitimately, just even slightly a tick above league average. Just be in the top 10 defensively
and
not be in the bottom 20s.
Take the ball away now and again. Intimidate somebody now and again. Be the Seahawks now and again instead of the shell of yourself that they've been defensively for the last couple of years. By the way, ultimate irony here. Will be they go to report this week, and Jamal Adams is like, yeah, I'm out for the season. Sorry, guys.
I'm taking the opt-out.
I just can't do it.
Don't.
Can you imagine?
Put that out into the
universe. That would happen to the Mariners. That doesn't happen to the Seahawks.
Can you imagine if at the end of all of this, Jamal Adams is like, yeah, I just don't feel comfortable.
I mean, Chance Warmack doing that yesterday, that made sense. He's like, I'm going to secure my $150,000 and I'm getting out of here. This is my best shot at getting paid this
right.
year. I'm gone.
Can you imagine? You give up two first-round picks and Bradley McDougal, and And all of a sudden, dude's just like, I don't know, man. Yeah. I don't feel good about this. There's a lot going on in Seattle. I'm out. I'm opting out.
I'd Jay Buhner vomit.
Hey, Brock, so we disagree on this, and that's fine. I understand where you're coming from. But can you help me understand the player a little bit? Can you kind of help me understand? I read this Bill Barnwell article, which is really, it's worth everybody's time if you get some time. It's long. It's a deep dive. He grades it a C+ for the Seahawks. But he also spends a lot of time going through why they would have made a deal that he grades a C+. And, you know, he's got some interesting questions in here. Could he be kind of like Tyrann Mathieu? Is Pete Carroll just that good of a coach, especially with guys in the secondary? I think those are both worth kind of taking a look at. But it was the third question that I actually found most interesting, which is essentially, how do you use this guy? He asks the question, what if Adams isn't really a safety? But he kind of brings up this idea of positionless football and how versatile is he? How could he be used? How would you use him?
Well, that's going to be, to me, one of the great challenges here and just one of the most intriguing storylines heading into throughout training camp. We won't see the preseason. And in some ways, I think for the Seahawks defensively, that's advantageous. It's not for their O-line. I would love to get those guys 2-3 games under their belt with, you know, a bunch of new pieces, maybe 80% new starters on their O-line. So I think that group takes a hit. But defensively, you know, and Pete's hinted at this with Marquise Blair in some of the different spots they're going to put him. If you just play him and things stay the exact same as they've always been, and Pete and Ken are going to play their 3-deep and just kind of some mix in some cover 2 and just do what they've done in the past, then it's incredibly wasteful to give up what you've given up, because this guy's got to be around the line of scrimmage. The last 2 years with the Jets, he was around the line of scrimmage, either on the ball, is almost a pass rushing defensive end and slash covering a tight end, and then in the box in their nickel stuff over 65% of the time, near 60.
Is that different from how they used Cam?
Well, remember, in their nickel, they have never played with KJ and Bobby, not as their two guys inside. The Pete has always believed in his 4-2 front, in having those two linebackers to play the run. He's not yet used in his career here, and I can't remember it. Maybe people can go back to college and say, no, Taylor Mays did some of that in college or what have you. You know, he has been very stout on his belief that you've got to have a couple linebackers in there, right? You've called it the big nickel. You've called it that quasi linebacker. Are you going to have the Mark Barron or the different, you know, what different players, Jamal Adams, what he's done with the Jets is their kind of nickel linebacker. And I'll be curious. I mean, you have to, if you've given up this much,
well,
and
you
play into
the
player's skill set,
that, right? I mean, with Blair on your team, who you gave up a lot for, a high second round pick, don't you have some of the pieces to do that?
Yeah, and you can play Ugo Amadi a little bit of nickel, or you can play him a little bit of nickel, and it's going to be Bobby and Jamal inside. Because this guy, and Paul Moyer said this to me after watching a bunch of tape, and this is a really good point that you don't hear, you know, said very often, but you probably should. And that is, Paul said, this guy's like a running back. He thinks and moves like a running back. And you're like, yeah, most of these guys were high school running backs and very talented players. Why doesn't that always translate to being able to find the ball? But guys don't. Instinct, you know, and that's kind of where his instincts, and you hear that all the time with him. And when he comes down and he plays around the line of scrimmage, that's all fine and dandy. But man, you better know exactly what that running back is doing and be able to find the ball consistently at his size. And he does it, in Paul Moyer's opinion, better than anybody in the league at that position. And, you know, so I will be deeply, deeply curious to see how creative Ken Norton and Pete Carroll can be to play to this guy's skill set, because the Jets did it. They blitzed him to 6.5 sacks. They played him on the ball, right? They played him and split him out covering tight ends, which you're going to have to do. And I also think this move was made.
He was so happy with the way the Jets used him that he torched them in every conceivable way before being eventually.
Well, I think you'll hear from Ryan Clark. We're going to have Ryan on. I think you're going to hear that was a lot deeper than the football. It was about the organization and just where that organization has been perennially for years.
Pace wasn't fit to lead the team.
Yeah.
He's not good.
So he's fairly vocal. You compared him to Cam as the alpha, like Cam coming in. He's not like Cam. He's more like Sherman. He's going to talk. He's going to tell you his opinion. His Twitter handle is The Press. And I think he'll be an incredible teammate early on, who's going to want to get paid. And he's going to want to be used in the way that he was used in New York. And that, to me, honestly, is one of the most fascinating storylines here, is how innovative can Pete and Ken be? Because that's not necessarily been their MO. It wasn't with the Legion of Boom, right? They didn't do a million things. You got to deal with us. And that was their mantra as they played their man and their three deep. But are you going to let this guy and cut him loose as a Swiss Army knife around the line of scrimmage doing everything that he's capable of doing? Because if you don't, giving up two firsts and a third rounder and ultimately eventually paying him $15 million a year, you're just not making the most of that asset.
But I got to imagine that they understand that, right?
You can understand it, but no, when it's not understand. Something that you have majored in, I'll go back to my right. major minor thing, right? This is not something that they have majored in schematically.
No, in some
through
ways,
their years.
No, but come on, they used Cam in a lot of these ways. They used him around the scrimmage, or around the line of scrimmage. And just kind of looking through that article from Bill Barnwell, and I don't need to make this the gospel, but I've never seen those heat maps before of where everybody lines up.
Very in vogue.
Thanks, Howdy. Howdy says they're very in vogue.
They look like lung x-rays, but yes.
They do look like lungs. That's what I was thinking. Like,
yes. Cam, similarity there. Oh, no question. And he would come down and he'd be in the alley and he'd be on the ball and in short yardage situations. And they would, pressure with him at times, but not to the level and the freedom of expression that this guy had in New York, right? And doing what they did within their scheme and as much as they blitzed him and as much as they used him creatively. That's, again, it's just not been in the DNA of Pete. And I love what Pete's done for 30 years. It speaks for itself. Built a dynasty in college football, built one of the great defenses in the NFL's history, but it was built really on the, you got to deal with us. We're going to line up. Yes, there's going to be a lot of secret sauce within our cover three week to week of how we mix and how we match and how we trade off. And it's not ever as simple as you think it is, or maybe what the top headline of it looks like defensively. But basically, they've believed in what they've done for a long time. Mm. And, in this league now, where it's going, in your division, with having to cover in space and do what you've got to do in space to cover Arizona, to cover the Rams, to deal with George Kittle in a power run game and play action game in San Francisco, you have to have dynamic dudes in space. That's what they drafted in the first round. That's what they believed in Jordan Brooks, that he's a heat-seeking missile that can find the football, that can play in space. Jamal Adams is a guy that can play in space, that he can find the football. And ultimately, those two can do what this defense did in their prime, which is run and hit and just be just demonstrative in those two characteristics.
You love everything about this.
I love the player.
Yeah. Here. Why are you so negative about this? Is it Bradley McDougal?
It is. I love that guy.
Seriously, why are you so negative about this?
Because you mortgaged your future for it. And you have to be right. Like this has to work.
Well,
you have to
be right with
them.
Those draft picks too, in order to have value in them. And the past 5 years, you haven't been right.
No, you're in this place now is a roster construction because you were not right on those first round picks. Right. And I went back and I looked at the Baltimore Ravens as a comparison. Now, the Ravens have missed the playoffs and at one point, had a top 10 pick in Ronnie Stanley that's become one of the best tackles in the game. But, they've drafted Lamar Jackson in the 32, last pick of the first round, changed their organization. They've drafted some corners in the teens and in the 20s that have been difference makers, Marlon Humphrey and others. I mean, we haven't been any good at this. So, we're not going to be any good at it anyway.
I don't see it that way. Way. That is not the argument in favor.
Well, I've seen it, but that's been an argument by the masses.
But that's more of a frustration argument. I think that's that's in some ways almost more of a joking argument of it's sort of like the Eddie Lacy's going to be our new guard argument, right? I mean, I think that
first round picks are supposed to be the way this works in the salary cap era. They are supposed to be your most talented players control for 5 years in a cost control manner.
Yeah, but there's still
valuable.
Risk associated with them, especially the guys you get in the later rounds. The Seahawks are getting a guy who's the fifth overall pick, sixth overall pick, something like that.
He was a sixth.
Okay,
yep.
Number six overall pick. So they're getting a number six overall pick who they know is good. There's no risk that he's not going to be good. He's a good player. He's a great player. He's an all-pro player, right? I mean, so you've taken away some of that risk. And quite frankly, if they had tried to trade up from where they usually are, somewhere in the 20s, it probably would have taken at least this to get up to the number six pick, maybe more than that, right?
Possibly,
so they did the equivalent
the draft,
of trading
yep.
up. Now, what they're losing out on are the first 2 years of club control.
And the positionality
that.
To be able to pick a legitimate position
but somebody else decided to pick a safety here at the number six pick. They once picked Earl Thomas at what, number
14?
Okay, so that's a little. Yeah, and okay, which of those guys turned out better? If you had picked Earl at six and Okung at 14, I think you'd have felt pretty darn good.
Well, even when they took Earl, so they didn't take Taylor Mays?
Right.
What?
So I don't know, man. I think these guys changed the game. And I know you're not getting those 2 years of control, and that bothers me. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that it's nothing. That's what keeps me from being absolutely in love with the deal, but I still think it's worth it. You need this kind of player on your team.
You do.
You don't have one right now. And if this was the only guy out there that was available for you, and he fits not just on the field but off of it, if he's that alpha male that they're looking for, if he's the leader that they're looking for, if he sets the tone for what this... Because tell me about the tone of the Seahawks defense last year.
Passive.
What was their tone?
Base defense, bro.
Basic. Hang out.
What people tweet me on Twitter. Basic. You're basic.
What was the difference between that and what it was, you know, when it was at its height? When it was aggressive? When it was mean? When it was...
Downhill.
Totally different. And if you need a couple of players like this to change that mentality, well, I think he's worth it, whether he plays safety or anywhere else. I'm in.
We don't know what the college football season's going to look like. These next couple first-round picks may be a bigger crapshoot than been any of the past 5 years.
Now, I'll give you two negatives for it for me, because I've been mostly very, very positive. Two things that I don't love. One, it makes me look even more kind of negatively at the draft you just had. I don't understand if this was a possibility to give up your next couple first-round picks, why you weren't trading back out of this year's draft and into one of those other seasons to give yourself some leeway there. Mm-hmm. That doesn't make sense to me. Once you weren't able to trade your first-round, all that, like, get back into next year's draft if you can, even if it's an extra third. I didn't even just mean the top of next year's draft. But give yourself some of those options so that, hey, this is what it would have liked if we traded out. It would have looked like if we traded out of our first round pick, right? You get an extra third, you get an extra fourth, whatever it is. Do that this year so that you're prepared for next year to give some of that stuff up. So it continues to make me look negatively at the draft you just had. And then the other part is, and Brock, I think you'll agree with this, there's an air of desperation here. And I'm not saying that it's the wrong move, but it is a short-term move. It's not the long-term move. And when you're confident that everyone's going to be around for the long-term, you can make decisions based on it. When you're not, you've got to make some decisions based on the short-term.
Okay.
And that may be, you were asking me about windows before, it might be Russell Wilson's window is closing. It might be the Pete Carroll's window is closing. Or it might be the John Schneider's window is closing. And those might be for three different reasons. I mean, with Russell, it's, you know, he's going to slow down. We'll see what happens. With Pete, you know, eventually he's going to walk away from this game, you would think. And with John, you know, I think there's some question marks after these last couple of drafts. And if he needs to win in a hurry to prove his value and prove his worth here, you know, sometimes that leads to moves like this.
Okay, well, then we'll just flip hats and I'll come around and try to offset a couple of those opinions. And I'll start with the second one. And in desperation, we'll look at the times that we find ourselves in. And I think this crew, who, by the way, unlike many other organizations around the league, were not together in a strike-shortened season as Pete and John were, having walked through that kind of offseason and that experience. And I think they're saying in this move, too, we need, much like they did with their O-line and some of their free agent acquisitions, we need flat out guys that have played before, right? And we need that bird in the hand. And we know we have an all-pro player here and an unbelievable player. And we unfortunately didn't have an offseason to develop Marquise Blair further or Ugo Amadi further. And there's still great unknown to them. So this is a known. And yeah, sorry, it's a little bit desperate, but desperate times call for desperate measures in the kind of the heat in the midst of the climate we find ourselves in. And if we want to truly go after this thing and win it, then we need a player of this ilk where there's no question of whether or not he can defend George Kittle. There's no question of how he's going to play in space against Arizona. There's no question that he can eliminate the fly sweep of the LA Rams and something that has just gouged us and killed us for the last couple years, that he's of that quality. So I think in some ways that, you know, and I remember the draft and thinking about the draft this year and how disappointed I was, because you have a couple franchises that said, no, we're going for it, man. 49ers in particular. And we'll trade a bunch of these picks because we got a great roster and we want to supplement it with two guys that we think can come right in here, and Ayuk and Kinlaw, the D tackle, and be total difference makers for us. And I was a bit envious. The Saints did the same thing. Nope, we got a really good roster and we're not going to do all this volume and in an offseason that's going to be wonky. We're going to just try to get a couple of the most talented players that we think can actually contribute this year. And I remember sitting there going, man, kind of jealous of that, because I think most of these Seahawk picks are developmental guys. And, you know, maybe they learned from that as well and said, no, we're going for it, man. We're going to do it. We're going to pull the trigger. We have to get, as you've said multiple times here, you know, a tremendous defensive player that walks in the door and changes the attitude of our defense. And thus you make the kind of desperation move, or at least the goods, to get a player back in his return.
Okay. Well, I'll buy that.
Now, again, I will say, and you know, as we just kind of unwind this, if the Let Russ Cook crowd continues to clamor for that and to put more and more on him, I'm going to say the same thing that you've said before. Let Bobby eat, and you better let Jamal cook. I mean, you better let him. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, there, I'll just admit, I have some reservation.
Don't you need to let Jamal roam free?
Let Jamal roam, let Bobby eat, and let Russ cook. Yeah, go. Just let him roam.
Let him roam.
He is, you know, and the last couple of years with Coach Norton, who's an incredible linebacker coach, I think a great leader of men. I don't know from an innovation standpoint, if I looked at what their defense did the last couple of years and say, ooh, man, I really like that. I like that little creative look. Oh, I like that little nuance. Ooh, I like that. You know, it just was, hey, let's get back to basics. And if it's just get back to basics and you're going to play cover two with this guy, or he's going to be single high safety and he's not going to be in the mix and he's not going to be creatively used, I'm going to be tremendously frustrated.
I think that makes sense. They're still, by the way, not letting Bobby eat. So with some of the savings here over the last few days, and now that you've started to beef up the back end, how about beefing up your defensive line with Snacks or who's the other guy they're talking about, Tim Jernigan, or one of these big fellas? Because I mean, we were talking about it last week, and it's still true. If they get an injury to either Puna Ford or Jaron Reed, which is not like impossible.
No, nope.
You're looking at Brian Monet.
Nope.
So you're going to need a little depth somewhere in your defensive line. Now, we know the Seahawks have been great at finding that, between guys who get cut, but without a preseason to kind of find out who those guys look like, I think that becomes a little more challenging this year to just find your veteran defensive tackle. So go find one of those dudes now. And if it's Snacks, but at least we know who he is. I don't expect him to be the player he once was, but you just need someone, some beef up front to get guys off of Bobby. And I'd be looking to continue to look. I still want Jadeveon Clowney.
Yep.
And I don't know whether, look, you don't have to pay. This was basically a wash for this year, right? Because of McDougald's money. If anything, they might have saved cap room in the short run.
Yep.
And then you cut some guys, yes, you know, this week, and Joey Hunt's gone, and, you know, Brandon Jackson. I hope we're going to be able to survive without paying Brandon Jackson.
Please tell me we're talking about Joey Hunt later. A whole segment devoted to that, man.
Yeah, no,
he'll be back.
We have a whole goodbye.
He's like Lem Jean-Pierre. He's always lingering.
We'll have a whole goodbye song, I'm sure, for Joey Hunt. But, Brock, you've saved some money.
You do.
So let's go. And if you need some people to restructure. But find us a defensive lineman who can plug up holes and let Bobby eat. And find me a defensive end, Jadeveon Clowney, who can get to the pass rusher. Because now all of a sudden, if you add both, I don't know how to do it. I'm not going to pretend to be a capologist. But if you could find a way to, just in free agency, now add those two guys, Snacks on a short-term deal, or Jernigan, either one of those guys on a short-term deal, and someone like Clowney, let's say it's Clowney on a deal where you're only paying him short term, even if it looks longer term.
Mm.
Tell me all of a sudden your defense didn't go from subpar to good.
Yeah, now you're top five team in the league, period. There's no question. And now the 49ers and the Rams and the Cardinals, when they prepare for you defensively, go, geez, man, they're kind of rocked up here on every level. We got to deal with Clowney up front and, you know, everything that they like to do. And they got some young people there that may get an opportunity. And Bruce Irvin there is a guy that's going to get you 6.5 to 8 sacks. So, yeah, on the front end, and there's still Bobby right in the middle. And now Bobby's balanced out on the back end with both Diggs, who is a difference maker for you, and Jamal Adams possibly right next to him in nickel stuff. Yeah, now you're a top five team in the league. You are a Super Bowl contender. There's no question about it.
I don't know, man. I don't know if that's what teams are going to be saying. Because I mean, the people I talk to in the league, what they're going to be saying is, I can't believe this team is going to try to succeed without Bradley McDougal. So, all right, here we go, Brock. It is summertime. Jokes aside, it's been beautiful out. Kyle's been hitting the Traeger hard.
Mm-hmm.
I've been out on my Weber grilling
last night.
Brock's lost some of his grilling skills, I've been told. Mm. That's what I've heard. Just
sad
in things going on in his life, and the grilling skills have slipped a little bit, kind of like my golf game. So. If you're having grilling issues yourself, or maybe you just don't feel like it, you know it's barbecue season, you want to be outside, let Famous Dave's deal with it for you, Brock. Unbelievable, unbelievable grilled food. Tons of options, okay? Catering, to go. They got Famous Feasts. They got Pitmaster. Hey, they got Pitmaster favorite combos.
Seth Smith.
You can even order meat by the pound. That's how Howdy does it. All right, here are some of the options. Let me remind everybody what we're talking about. St. Louis style spare ribs, Brock.
Mm-hmm.
Whole country roasted chickens. Texas beef brisket. Oof, I'm talking Georgia chopped pork.
Yep.
Talking burgers, talking wings, talking sandwiches, even home style desserts. Okay, so if you're thinking as you're listening, getting a little hungry, getting a little thirsty, they got adult beverages available as part of this thing. Okay, this all pairs with barbecue, Brock. It's all about the summer. So here's what you're going to do if you're getting hungry. togo.famousdaves.com. togo.famousdaves.com. I am thinking St. Louis spare. At the moment, it's St. Louis spare ribs. That's kind of I love spare ribs. I don't know why that's not everyone's favorite. And how did the fact that you were saying the other day, I think what you're forgetting is that at their best, ribs are just amazing. When they fall off the bone and they're tender and all that, you're just...
It's fine. It's good.
It's not
I love
fine.
It. It's great.
Better than good.
I love it.
And it's the and if you've got a good barbecue sauce, like Famous Dave's does have, then it's really the best. It's the best vehicle to explore the barbecue sauce. So yeah, I think you're crazy on that. togo.famousdaves.com. All right, Brock. Well, as promised, excited to talk to Ryan Clark, former safety, all pro safety, or played for Pittsburgh and New York and Washington. Great career in the NFL. Has been great with ESPN. And who better to talk about Jamal Adams with? Ryan, thanks so much for taking a few minutes with us.
Yeah, oh, man, it's great to be here, man. Just, you know, it's exciting times in Seattle right now. And I'm extremely excited, too, for a fellow LSU safety, Jamal Adams, to be there.
Yeah, so let's sort of figure out. I kind of have two questions. We'll get to who he is as a football player, but who is he as a person? Because I understand you know him pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, I met him when he was 18, and it was such a cool deal. Social media is an awesome place, and it was my last year in the league, and I get a message from him, and he talks about how he wants to be a part of the great lineage of LSU DBs and the great lineage of LSU safeties, and how he was reaching out to a lot of the guys that used to play there just for wisdom, just for a relationship, just for a connection. And I just thought it was awesome for somebody that young, somebody to be a freshman in college, to kind of understand those things, but also understand where he wanted to go, where he wanted to be. And that was beautiful to me. And, you know, and so just in that, he talked about his work ethic. He talked about his goals. He talked about the way that he thought he could achieve those things. And he just continued that throughout his career. He was that way. In college, he was always the leader. He was always someone who had a large admiration for family. And football became a part of his extended family. But now, in talking to him about this move, he wants to win. And, you know, a huge thing he felt was in the Jets organization was, no matter how well he played, that the way the organization was set up top to bottom wasn't there and wasn't set up in the way that he could become a winner and he could experience all that comes along with that. And I think that was a huge part for this move, and I'm excited for it.
So blockbuster trade comes down over the weekend. Your initial reaction when you hear he lands with Pete Carroll in Seattle for you, Ryan, was what?
Excitement for Seattle, honestly, and excitement for him. Listen, The Legion of Boom set a different tone the last decade for that organization. And I think, you know, there are certain organizations that, because of the style of play, because of the success of the team, they start to hold a different place in our minds. You know, anytime you play defense in Pittsburgh, where I played, you were always going to be compared to the steel curtain. That was always something that was going to be valued there. You know, we had our own highlight film every week. We had our own song. And that's not what happens in most places. Most places is about offense. Well, I think Seattle is one of those places. I think Seattle understands that their Super Bowl ring and, you know, their last two Super Bowl appearances was because they had dominant defenses. It was because they had a dominant secondary. And part of that secondary was one of the hardest hitters of our generation, Cam Chancellor, and to me, one of the top three safeties, not only to play recently, but to ever play this game, in Earl Thomas. And so now you add a piece like Jamal Adams, it's part of that lineage, it's part of what, you know, Seattle has become. And I think it's an awesome opportunity for him to be in a place that understands great defensive play, understands great secondary play, but to also, as he did at LSU, continue a lineage of greatness and a legacy of greatness. And so I think it's a match made in heaven. I think it's an opportunity for him to play near the football and near the line of scrimmage, much in the way that a guy like Cam Chancellor got an opportunity to do. And I think he will excel there, and I think he'll help that defense as well.
How do we compare him to Cam?
Totally different. Totally different. I think it's just so hard to compare anybody to Cam. It's so difficult to look at a guy that tall, being able to play in space the way he was, but to be the ultimate enforcer. You know, many teams, and listen, this is on a team that had Bobby Wagner at linebacker, one of the top linebackers in the league, and he has been since being drafted, you know, years ago. But Cam Chancellor was the guy. Cam Chancellor was the man who set the tone for this team. And so I don't even want to say, okay, Jamal's going to compare to him in that way, but I also think they're different. I think Jamal does some things better than Cam does. I think, you know, not being as tall allows him a little bit of the movement skills that Cam didn't have. Some of the man-to-man things that Cam couldn't do, I believe Jamal will be able to do. I think he's the more versatile chess piece. He is a guy that you could put in the middle of the field at times. Now, because of his aggression, do you want to do that, you know, all the time? No, but it's something that he can do. And so I just think he's going to be used in Pete Carroll's defense probably a little differently than we've ever seen a safety used under Pete Carroll, because I believe he has some attributes and traits that blend him to be able to play strong safety and free as well. And so it's going to be fun to see how he's utilized in that defense.
All right, there you go. There's Ryan Clark, a friend of the show, unfortunately having some let's give you a little look behind it. We had some phone issues. We were not able to complete the entire
Were you considering blaming him there? Unfortunately, Ryan's having phone, some phone, you know.
Yeah, it's not working. No, that's on us.
Okay.
We're having some
phone. You didn't pull a Rappaport and say I got to go. I'm sorry. I got to take this call.
No. I'm sorry. I'll call you back. Well, no. Good talking to you
guys. What's that dude's name? It's not Chucky Dukes. What's his name?
Chad Dukes.
Chucky Dukes, the old BC
kid. You're a nerd in a suit.
That's what we're going to call Ryan Clark. I think you hear, look, I'm excited about the player, Brock, and I'm excited about the guy. I know that, you know, we've heard with shoes and come on and, you know, in typical New York fashion, trash whoever's leaving on their way out the door, just like they do in Boston. Same story in both of those cities.
Just like what Shusen did with Sheldon Richardson.
It doesn't matter who it is.
It's the exact same.
It doesn't matter who it is. If there's been a player of any consequence who exits Boston or New York, it is the job of anybody who's connected to those teams to just torch that dude on the way out the door. So, okay, that's fine. I'm pretty excited about that kind of a player and that kind of a guy.
Well, this defense needs the juice, man. And Pete loves guys. He loves dealing with it. He's the kind of parent that doesn't mind the child that acts up, because he wants to work through it and try to meet him, try to understand him, and ultimately try to let him be who he is. And yes, Jamal is going to have a megaphone, because Bobby is, you know, certainly the leader. He's the guy that's been here. He's the All-Pro. He's a future Hall of Famer. He's all those things. But he's not nearly as demonstrative as the guys that came before him. And I think as Jamal settles into his role here, I think he will take some of that banner and run with it. Mm.
Well, I'm excited about that, and just excited about what this is going to do. And I don't know. You mentioned juice. That's what they used to have.
Yep.
They used to have juice. I mean, we can go through all the specific differences between what we've seen the last couple of years and what we saw before that. But at its core, they used to have juice. And if he's going to bring that and kind of refill their tank, so to speak.
Like in the pit? Like where stuff goes down, like in the pit?
Yeah. Man, if you don't get that, you're going to...
It's a freaking toughness.
You're going to lose.
You're going to fail.
You're going to fail. That's what it is. Excuse me. You're going to fail.
Jamal gonna be in that pit.
That's so funny. Hey, I had a weird story from the other night. I thought you guys might appreciate this. Kyle, I think I can say this. I feel like it's okay.
Is this podcast worthy?
I think so. I think it's okay to say,
you
right?
wouldn't say it,
make
it on
me
the air.
Nervous.
I think I'd say this on the air.
We may layer this with beeps, but whatever.
I think it's okay. So I got into bed the other night while Heather was still in the bathroom. Heather's in the bathroom finishing brushing her teeth or whatever. I get into bed with Wendell, of course. Mm-hmm. So I lift Wendell up onto the bed because he can't jump up onto the bed. That's a little high for him. But at this point, he can barely jump onto the couch. So, yeah, I mean, I do him a little solid every night, and I throw him up onto the bed. And he and I get into bed, and Heather's still finishing brushing her teeth. And all of a sudden, he makes this sort of loud, painful squelching sound is the only way I could describe it. And Heather kind of pokes her head out the door of the bathroom. She's like,
thought it was you.
She says, is that Wendell? I said, yeah. She says, did he step on his again?
What?
Whoa.
What?
And I said, yeah, I think so. And then it caused me to realize that Wendell has stepped on his own so many times over the course of 11 years that there's a recognizable sound that he makes when he does it. That when he makes that sound, we instantly know, right.
Poor Wendell.
Wendell just stepped on himself again.
Oh. How like,
is he like Ramses? Is he like Ramses? He's just kind of sagging in his later years?
Sagging on the ground?
No, it's not that. He's just that klutzy.
Well, and that nimble, I guess.
No, it's not nimbleness. Well, I mean, remember, French Bulldogs have their bow legs, so the legs kind of, the feet kind of curl under.
Wait, was it?
It's not while he's walking, though.
With his back legs?
I'm not sure. I think with
what? Hold on.
I'm not sure which paw gets it.
Wow.
But somehow he's done this often enough that we instantly recognize, I know what happened. I know that sound. Only one thing makes Wendell make that sound.
Poor guy.
So I know I've told you some funny stories about Wendell over the years, but I felt like I had not told that one, Brock, and I felt like maybe it needed to be out there.
Is there a way to kind of remedy this?
I don't know.
I mean, poor guys, what did you say, 11?
Yeah.
Still dealing with it?
I know.
Now, Larry Salt goes with kind of an athletic supporter.
True.
That may.
I wasn't sure how this was going to bring its way around to my dad.
Well, now, famously, your dad was also a noticeable screech. No, but, you know, Wendell could look. You know, it's not always necessary. Maybe we were overlooking some purpose.
Would it be
it
perfect
was serving
for him because it has the nothing in back.
Yes.
Right?
It's just a strap.
It's perfect for a dog.
Nice chaps for him.
It would actually suit him very well.
Is that dog in chaps?
I think no, he's just wearing an athletic supporter.
He's in a doggy, canine jock.
Yeah. I was thinking about my dad the other day as I was watching the Mariners on, Saturday? Hmm. What's the dude who came in for the save on Saturday?
Taylor Williams?
Yes, that guy. Watching that, all I could think of to myself is, this is a Larry Salk night. This is a Larry Salk method
here.
Game for sure. The Mariners done everything. We'll come back. We'll talk about the Mariners in just a sec. Brock, I was saying that was a Larry Salk method kind of a game on Saturday, right? They had done it all right. Right, that you'd seen everything you kind of needed to see. Kyle Lewis, right, home run, and had his unbelievable at bat late in the game to come back and win it. They kind of shed long with a bit. Like, you'd seen it all. You'd seen everything you needed to see. The win was irrelevant at that
shed
point.
Long coming in at 100 miles an hour.
It was
I
great.
Love that.
The acceleration. It was so fun. It was and it didn't really matter whether or not, what's his name? Taylor Williams?
Taylor Williams.
I mean, it doesn't matter if Taylor Williams gets the save or not. So I probably should have just turned it off, but I watched and it was pretty cool. And seeing him come back, find a way to strike out Bregman on that pitch was great. So opening weekend, what'd you think?
Kyle Lewis show.
Pretty
superstar.
Much.
Superstar. The kind of young star, not named Julio Rodriguez or Jaron Kelnick or Logan, or Kyle's kind of been not necessarily forgotten because he came on the scene with home run after home run after home run last year and everything else, and he was the Golden Spikes Award winner. But after a couple knee injuries, you're like, it's really sad and bummer that he won't be what he was projected to be at one point. And all he's done here out the gate in his first 30 some games is be as good as any Mariner, from a hitting prowess and power prowess as any has ever been. And neat to see him just kind of taking that opportunity before those other youngsters will certainly get, their time to shine, that maybe he will make his mark. So I don't think there's any way to look at the first four games down in Houston and not say, wow, that was super impressive to see Kyle do everything that he's capable of doing.
Yeah, he's got an approach, which is what impresses me for a young player like that. He seems to have a pretty good idea of what he wants to do with the plate. I was on with Tom, Jake, and Stacy right before the season started, and they were asking me about Lewis, and I just said, look, it's going to be about adjustments for him. We know he can hit a fastball. The question is what happens when he gets the real treatment. Remember the story I told you about John McDonald when I asked him about Felix, and he was like, man, I don't know anything about facing Felix. He just throws me fastballs because I can't hit. Like, you got to ask somebody good. I'm the 25th guy on the roster. I'm here for defense. Like, you got to ask somebody that he actually, you know, pays attention to, has a scouting report for, et cetera, because he's just throwing me fastballs.
Yep.
When they get the scouting report on Kyle Lewis and they figure out what gets him out, how will he adjust? And I think that this weekend series was a pretty interesting one. What happens? First game, he takes that fastball from Verlander and hits it as hard as you can hit a baseball. I mean, that ball was tattooed, right? Yep. What does he get the next time up?
Four off-speed pitches.
Four straight.
Yep.
For a strikeout. Couple of sliders, couple of curveballs, see you later. Good luck. And you're thinking there, okay, they took him seriously the second time up. Verlander knows what he did to him the first time, and he's taken him more seriously the second time. The thing that I love is that over the course of the rest of the weekend, he didn't let that get him down.
Mm-mm.
He still found ways to go the other way. He found a way to come up with a big hit when they needed him to the most at the end of that game on Saturday to finally – or Sunday. 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 Yep. To break the losing streak to the Astros. So I'm really impressed with his approach, with his adjustments, with his patience, and then obviously he's got the big time power.
Yeah. Oppo Taco. Cool. I just love the Oppo Taco.
He's got a lot of good energy around him too. I don't know. Do you see the shot of him at first base? It's just sort of it just looks very natural for him to play the hero like that.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's a lot of good energy.
And if he's gonna prove himself a center fielder, that'd be another little
help.
Bonus.
Well,
came out thinking he was going to be in right.
Yeah.
And Malik in center, that would have been interesting to say the least.
For all of the positives I have about Kyle Lewis after the first couple games of the season, Malik's tough for me, man. I really struggle with
that. Well, and
Malik's.
Is it the pants?
No, I don't mind.
It might be the pants.
Flare. I don't mind
I know
that.
Dave Sims loves the billowing pants. They're a size too big.
I don't mind that.
He looks like Payne Stewart.
He has, you know, I said that Kyle Lewis has an approach at the plate. I don't know that Malik Smith has an approach to anything. Like, I just watch him up. I'm like, I can't fathom what he's trying to do when he comes up. And he came up with a few hits. I'm not saying that he's like a terrible, terrible player, but
one for 11.
I really struggle watching him.
He needs the electrons from the earth. Like, he got some. It was probably cut short.
It's hard for me to imagine that Malik Smith is going to make it through these 60 games with the Mariners.
He's on your top three list of the hardest players you've had to watch.
Geez, let's see. There were a lot of guys on there.
Give me your podium in Seattle the last 10 years. Any sport, last 10 years
any
in Seattle.
Sport?
Give me your podium for bronze, silver, and gold medalist of the hardest to watch. And I know I'm putting you on the spot.
Tedrick Thompson's probably gold.
It's gotta be for you. Yeah.
I mean
Stephen Terrell's way up there for me.
Yeah, but he just didn't have enough cracks at the bites at the apple.
Not good.
He was pretty bad.
He was really.
He was
not
the
good.
Safety. Wait, hold on. Let me just remember. Stephen Terrell was the safety that got beat deep over the top.
He was
the
one
threw him under the bus.
Yes.
Yeah, Pete was
the
like,
only
yeah,
player
that
in the history
rough.
Of Can't Pete Carroll in Seattle. That
yeah,
has
I don't
not
think
he,
I don't think it's fair to go back before Pete Carroll to this because that would just be the whole team.
Yeah,
the whole team that Jim Mora fielded. I mean, they were all Julius Jones is way up on that list.
Eddie Lacy's up there.
I preferred Eddie Lacy to Julius Jones. That's how low I thought of Julius Jones.
Watching Jermaine Effetti for 4 years just be a turnstile.
That was hard.
For me.
Yeah, there have been a lot of tough ones. I mean, Jose Lopez at the end. We had a whole campaign, if you'll remember.
Sean Figgins has to be.
Jose. Yeah, because Figgins was just, I mean, him and Hotchman had the attitude that was so awful. And so, all right, it's not fair to put Malik up with those guys. He didn't have a bad attitude. He didn't seem like a bad guy. I mean,
good teammate.
Figgins and Hotchman were bad guys.
Good energy. He seems like he's trying hard. He's working hard. All of
but just
things.
No approach, scattershot, all over the place.
No pop. And
yeah, no contact,
defense.
But he's swinging at everything. I find him very challenging. Flip side of that, I could watch J.P. Crawford all day long.
Mm.
I love him. I know he's not the best player in the world. I'd like for him to hit a little bit more than he has. He's played pretty good defense. I love the way he plays the game of baseball. Like, that's what I want.
All-out hustle, right?
All the time.
Yep.
He's constantly all out all the time, but it doesn't feel for show.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't feel like he's phony. It doesn't feel like he's faking it and it doesn't feel like he's overdoing it and kind of embarrassing himself. It's like, no, he hit a ground ball to short and he's digging all the way there because there's a chance he might actually get there.
Yep.
And you will never see him not running all the way to first base. He hustles on defense. I don't know. I love the way he plays the game of baseball. I would like to see him, you know, continue to develop as a better player. But give me more guys like J.P. Crawford, and I think you'll win.
Two triples on the year so far.
I know, hit him in the same game.
Is this like a tidbits and takeaways, and we just didn't ever really do the music behind it a little bit?
Maybe it is.
Can I just give you one,
my
final strong analysis, which I think anybody listening to this podcast would tend to agree with me. You know, since the Brock and Salk, you know, show left the airwaves on an everyday basis, so now we're on once a week. Gosh, I really missed you and Howdy competing, trying to learn our Mariners, because as many of these guys came out, I had no idea who they were.
You didn't know Marmalejos?
Who?
Jose
Marmalejos. Marmalejos.
No.
You didn't know Marmalejos?
I know about Marmalejos.
Of course you did. He's the next Vincat. Yeah.
I feel like Howdy would have owned you this year in that competition, Salk,
maybe
more than ever before.
Well,
with everything else going on with poor Wendell, dealing with what Wendell's dealing with, and and your added responsibilities, and you're just not been in on the nitty-gritty as Howdy and Shannon are on every one of these prospects and players from the beginning. And I feel like Howdy would have totally owned you. And I missed that exercise because I needed it. I needed it when Taylor Williams came out of the bullpen. I needed it when Stu Gotts came out of the bullpen. I needed it.
There's when Stu Gotts.
What's his name?
Zach Grotz.
Oh, Zach Grotz.
Yeah. Zach Grotz. I apologize.
What
was the other one?
Mishkowicz? The Switchfish.
Mishwish.
Right. The Switchfish. You got him.
Anthony Mishwish.
A lot of new guys on the team, Brock. And maybe we're up to speed on all of them. Maybe not. But the guys that matter, we certainly. I mean, I remember you say Kikuchi. I got to see it again.
Yep,
he did. The same thing. I know he's throwing a little harder, which is good.
Yes.
But and it's just one game against a really, really good lineup, but just a lot of the same of like he's kind of cruising along and then just no consistency to keep it going. And all of a sudden, you know, his pitch count just completely gets away from him and he's out of the game in the fourth inning again.
Yep.
So, I mean, there were some positive signs in what he did early, but we've seen those before from him. We've seen him have that ability. The question is actually like continuing it and going deep enough into the game to have a real quality start. So, you know, kind of more of the same there. I really liked Evan White, the home run on I think that was Monday night.
Monday night.
Right.
Good. Jumped off his bat.
Yeah. Like, I mean, that was kind of my question with him. I know he can play defense. I know he'll get on base. Can he hit for some pop? And he's a big enough dude to do it. So it was nice to see that. I mean, that's definitely a good thing. I like that Kyle Seager's been hot so far.
He's been real hot.
If there's any opportunity to deal Kyle Seager, let's find it, because if he can bring back even a little bit more talent, that's probably going to be worth your time. And then the other guy just kind of wanted to hit on quickly is Shed Long, because he, to me, is kind of that in between what I was saying about Kyle Lewis and what I was saying about Malik Smith. I'm not sure that he's got much of an approach. I'm not sure there's like a specific plan every time he goes up, but he's talented. And he's got, like, again, a good positive energy about him. He goes hard all the time. And those things seem to kind of balance out. So with him, and because he's not been in the league very long, I mean, even, you know, less time than Malik's, I've got some hope that he could grow into some of an approach. And
you
shed
that about him from the beginning. Just he loved his approach.
I have shed that about him for quite some time.
Swings out of his shoes.
All right, that's obviously going to do it. That shows that we're done. We've run out of material for today, quite clearly, once we've gotten to the Shed Long jokes. But, there you go. Mariners back in action. Kraken have a name. And the Seahawks have Jamal Adams.
So and Wendell's got chaps.
And Wendell's got his own issues. All right, we will talk to you guys next week. Till then, hey.
Barn.
See you, everybody.
Get to the chopper!